Okay, everyone, we'll get going if we could. Can I have the roll call, please?
Bird?
Present.
Kapler?
Here.
Ormsby?
Here.
Peters?
Here.
Rafferty?
Here.
Altenburg?
Here.
Wendell?
Here. Okay, good, the roll call. We had minutes from the last meeting.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move for approval of the February 20th minutes as submitted.
Second. Okay.
We have a motion and a second to approve the minutes from February 20th, 2019. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The minutes are approved. Okay, so everyone, welcome to the Plan and Zone Commission for March the 20th. Welcome to the first day of spring. We're all glad to have that here, finally. So we are a recommending body appointed by the City Council to look at all matters relative to zoning. There's a number of you in the audience, so at the appropriate time, if you have an input on a case, I'll ask for that from the audience. And if you would stand at the podium to my right and to your left back there and give us your name and your input, we'd love to hear it. So with that, we will begin. Greg?
Mr. Chairman, the first case that we have is involving subdivision off of Fieldsyke Drive right here. Barcelona's further on down over in this direction. And then we have Crow Creek running right through here. You can see we've got a 100-year floodplain area. And then this line here delineates the floodway as it goes through that parcel. We have R3 zoning, A2 right here. The remainder of this area is all R3, which is single family tolerant and duplex tolerant, and also would permit under our new revised ordinance four townhouses as long as there are no more than four consecutive units. This is the old land, the old preliminary plat. You approximately have a 100-year floodplain running through here like that. You had 25 lots on this. And you have 24 on the final plat that was submitted and approved by this body. And this was the original configuration that was looking at, I believe, single-family housing. Under the new configuration, you have 46 lots. The means of entry here, and you have this drive, this area here with two different names, that lane, essentially West Creekside and East Creekside Lane, serving the lots. You have an outlot here. This area here would be a triplex area, as well as these three lots down here. All of the other remaining lots would contain the fourplex or the four-unit townhouse design. We also have the outlots here that are designated for the 100-year floodplain area to keep those lots out. They're also lowest built elevations on all these lots due to the nature of the proximity of the floodplain to any potential structure. So there are limits on to what level the lowest built floor might be placed. Staff, in reviewing this proposal, would recommend approval with the conditions that are listed in the report. I would ask, are there any questions?
Thanks, Greg. John, any updates since publication? Or Brett?
Yes, we met with the developer and their engineer, came in and discussed snow removal. This is obviously a similar layout to what was approved at the Woodlands. We've got a little less storage compared to the Woodlands. The Woodlands has the detention basin, if you remember, on the south side that provides for a little, little more snow storage. So we had both myself and Brian Schmidt, Public Works Director, so was there to discuss the operational components. And what John's bringing up is the building configuration that we all kind of worked out. Our initial concern with the top layout that you see there is the amount of green space between the driveways basically not being sufficient for the residents, or the HOA in this case, to actually place the driveway snow. They were showing 12 feet there, if I remember correctly. Not a lot of area, and then also limits your vertical storage that you can get as well. So our concern with the initial was if that was the layout, that street would, or that snow would then get pushed out into the street, and then it's going to affect our right-of-way snow storage. So the compromise was the revised layout. Actually works out to just a hair smaller in terms of area, in terms of cumulative area, but the individual areas are much larger, so it gives us both a wider and a more vertical ability to for snow storage through there. And Public Works Director did review this as well and was sufficient.
So question on, I'm with you on the theory, but how does the snow move to the snow storage area? Do you move it there?
No. So we will just do like we would on any normal street. We'll come through and we'll plow curb to curb. But this, in our opinion, and I think the developers in the audience, they could say that as well. So they operate with an HOA with a snow removal service. So that contractor for them will then clear their driveways, and this gives them and us a little more snow storage.
So they'll bring an end loader or something in.
Yeah, and I think they actually, maybe Rita Ryan, you could comment. I think you said that your contractor does actually do some handwork on the driveways just in terms of actual snow blowers.
Yes, Reed Windmiller with Windmiller Development. Yes, our contractor uses both trucks and loaders and snow blowers to move the snow. John, if we could go back to the main overall one of the new plan.
That showed the snow storage areas.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Or actually, Greg.
Greg, yeah.
Sorry,
it, yeah.
Another one. Is there another one that showed it on? Okay, that one.
Greg, can you kind of highlight
the darker
areas?
Gray there?
Yes.
Yeah. So one of the good things about this development, or the way this is laying out, is most of the units can be pushed across the street as well as to the sides, since we don't have opposing driveways from each other. So that gives us plenty of extra storage for them to move snow around in.
So Ryan, for the units that are adjacent to the remaining A2, or I guess I'll ask the city too, are you able to push the snow onto that property?
Yes, because that would still be right away. So we still do have the ability to clear that inside curb lane.
Sorry, I called you your brother's name. I didn't catch that.
Close enough. He's here too.
Not the first time.
Yeah.
So that was a. Mr. Chair, the larger discussion was that when we come in and clear snow is that we push snow. We don't place snow. So we're going to clear it. It's going to go up on the curb, and then their operation will have to place the excess snow that they have in these couple areas. The Woodlands, they're able to place it down in the detention area.
At the south end over there. Right.
Yep. So they have the interior lots. That's, I guess, the advantage of only having those one set of lots, I can't see the lot numbers, but the three vertical on the screen, that back side of those lots gives them the ability to snow to store an extra amount there.
Brent, the reconfiguration of the driveways that John showed us, mm-hmm. How does that impact the on-street parking? Does that give more parking?
It actually will, yes. And actually, I've got a family member that lives in the one at the Woodlands, so I've seen the kind of the difficulty there. That center area is long enough for two vehicles, and then the individual ones are wide enough for one vehicle. Whereas the layout to the top of the screen, you can't quite see there now, is only 12 foot wide. So you really did not have any available except for in between buildings. And then there's still the same amount for each individual unit in terms of the driveways.
On that bottom configuration, you're showing about 2021 parking spaces, both internal driveway spaces and street parking for those two structures, or eight units.
Yep.
And that's concept at this point. We'll see a site plan.
You will.
Correct.
Later
yes.
on.
Site
yeah,
plan.
Which will be really good to look at.
One more parking question. With this Lewis Edition or Lewis First Edition lot, there's a lot of units then that will not have, as you said, driveways across the street.
Mm-hmm.
Will parking be permitted on that side of the street?
Yes, because that is a 31-foot back-to-back mm-hmm. street.
Okay. What's going to be on this large lot, Lewis First Edition Lot 1?
There's an existing home there.
Oh.
So that is actually separate from this plat. They were not able to acquire that.
They've surrounded that existing home.
Well, mm-hmm. it's the existing home that sold off the.
Yeah, when that particular person sold the property to them, they kept theirs.
Okay. Anyone else on the commission?
Just some clarification. My understanding is that now this, instead of having 24 units, you'll have 46 units. Is that right?
That is correct.
I'm just going to ask a question. Later on in the agenda, we're going to be looking at the densities. And how does this new layout compare to that new density?
It would
density?
Meet the 4,000 square feet per unit.
It would meet
yes,
the 4,000? Thank you.
I had one more question about the retaining wall on lots 1, 2, and 3. We've kind of had some challenges lately in seeing things vertically because we don't see them on our plans. Is that, how big of a wall is that?
Do you remember?
5 foot tall.
Okay.
That would be.
It doesn't have elevations now,
that's
but
about right.
That would be required to have elevations on the site plan.
It's going to be roughly 5 to 6 foot tall in the tallest part, and then it's going to taper down on both ends. We're also going to use the, if it matters, the very large blocks that are 3 foot long, 2 foot tall, and 2 or 3 foot deep. So they're not moving anywhere.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Reed, when I went out there and looked, there's a lot of fill on site. Looks like you're bringing it in mm-hmm. and maybe city too. So will the filling and chain have any impact? There's a house that sits to the west and it sits really low and it appears to be in the flood way actually. Is that going to impact that house at all with what's
in
happening?
Order for them to do any fill on this site or any other site that's in a regulated flood zone, they have to secure a flood zone development permit.
Yeah.
And an engineer, as part of signing off on that, signs off that they've done the calculations and that it will not adversely impact anyone upstream or downstream. When you look at this overall watershed, I don't know if you even have an estimate of how many.
It's so minor. The Crow Creek watershed
is
upwards of like 5,000 acres at this point that actually drains through here. I'd done some calcs in previous life at a project in Eldridge, and it was 3,500 to 4,000 acres there. So you've got another 1,000 or so through Bettendorf and Davenport. So it's an incredibly large watershed. So the fill for 20 lots around the ring.
And I do know the structure you're talking about that was here before I came to Bettendorf. I don't know how that got in there.
I don't know either, but it's low.
Yes, it is.
It sure is.
Yeah. Okay. Others on the commission?
Yeah, one more question about the density. Does that density consider the outlots? Is that how you get the 4,000 square feet?
Greg and I did it both ways, didn't we, Greg? And we even took the outlots out.
I think so,
and
yeah.
did not include that. And maybe that's a discussion we can have later on what you want to include when we're doing those calculations.
But without the lots?
Yeah, it made it.
It still is 4,000?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
I'm having trouble
trying to visualize what this is going to look like, and I'm trying to make sure that we don't have something that is so packed that it looks or is adverse to the neighborhood.
Talking,
I mean, most of the neighborhood is
total 11
homes.
To 13 structures.
Yeah, Ryan Windmiller with Windmiller Design Build. So, to give you some ideas on that, there's 11 acres or there's 10 and a half acres total there. With the outlots, what's that?
12 units or 12 buildings.
And 12 buildings. In the Woodlands, you guys have seen the Village of the Woodlands, the density, what those are. That is on, I believe, 8 acres and has 49, so it has more units on it. It has 49. So these lots are deeper. There's nothing across the street for them, and you've got more outlots going with them. So the density is going to feel less than what the Village of the Woodlands feels like, to give you a perspective.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. Anyone else on the commission? Okay, no. Anyone in the audience other than Windmillers with regard to this matter? No? Okay, back to the commission.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move we approve. I think it's case 19-024, preliminary plat, subject to staff recommendations.
I'll second.
No, third.
Okay, I think Scott got you on that one.
He did.
Yep. All right, we have a motion and a second to approve case 19-024, subject to staff recommendations. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. 19-024 is approved. And we'll look forward to seeing the site plan on that one, too. Okay, Greg.
Mr. Chairman, our next case involves a final plat for the area outlined here in red, which is under a UMI designation and is a mixture, or will be, of some commercial here, multifamily up in this area, and then you do multifamily down here. The remainder is going to be in somewhat of a single family designation. This is the approved plat as it stands at the present. And essentially, you had at one time circulation like this with a street coming through. You had townhouses in this area, some here, and then you had the multifamily units designated for these areas. The remainder were going to be essentially type duplex configurations, I believe, up in this area, and then the rest was all going to be of single family nature. This gives you an idea of what was part of what was originally approved, and this is the preliminary plat. What has changed since then, as staff has discussed with the developer, and what we decided to do is make this remaining area here private drive so that there is a clear point of termination when it comes to the responsibility of where this right-of-way will extend. And that will be pretty much the Glenbrook Circle North designation, and then the remainder of this Glenbrook Circle drive or lane or whatever will be the remnant. And all of this will be rededicated back to the developer, and that'll be private drive to as a means of access for all these lots within this area. The designation here again on the final plat, we see the commercial lots, and then the remaining lots up here, again, being the single-family variety. One larger lot for the senior living area, and this is potential for senior area as well as this. And then all of these lots here will remain as pretty much as before for the multifamily apartment complex that is designated already in the previous site plan that you had approved. Staff, in reviewing this proposal, would recommend approval with the conditions listed in the report. I would ask, are there any questions?
Thanks, Greg. John, any subsequent since publication?
When Greg said the conditions in the report, there are some house cleaning items we're going to have taken care of before this goes to council. If you look at the bottom of lot 7, you see where it says a detention easement. We're going to have that actually designated as an outlot. If you look to the north of lot 7, you'll see where there is a conservation area easement, but that arrow points to nothing. We're having them actually delineate the area that's going to be the conservation area. Other housekeeping things, we'd like to see the easements not faded on here, the easements that are actually going to be going on. I think that was just something that got turned off is one of the...
Yeah, that's just a CAD.
It's item. A CAD thing. So there's a couple of housekeeping items, and that's why those requirements are, or I'm sorry, those conditions are in the request from you.
Okay, thanks, John.
I believe... I'm not sure that a decision has been made on lot 17, whether that'll be needed for more of a, to be used for a senior center type thing or not. If you'll recall, originally there were going to be four apartment complexes where lots 6 and 17 are. So regardless of what this is, it's a reduced density. And I do want to say that I appreciate that the developer is putting in that 25-foot buffer to the west and to the north to give those neighbors some comfort.
Okay, thanks, John. Questions from the commission? I've got one. Item 6 says the letter from the pipeline is required approving any encroachments. Do we anticipate encroachments?
Parking lots.
Okay. So
I'm sure that's not going to be an issue, but we want to have that documented before it goes to council. They're aware of that.
Where does that go through, roughly? Right, can you just
right down the middle, you're seeing that where outlots D and E are, and those lines that continue all the way to the south.
Okay,
that's the pipeline easement.
Is that the reason for those outlots?
Yeah, well, yes, they're going to use them as green space, and but
they're not required.
It's not required. We have single family residential lots built
apartment buildings.
Well, not too far from my neighborhood or from Paul's neighborhood that are.
Yeah,
that include the that very
as part of the yard.
Yeah.
Yes, as part of the yard. The only encroachment that they really care about is either a structure, which obviously you can't have, and generally speaking, they prefer to not have pipe running parallel to the pipeline. Crossings are okay, which are basically unavoidable. If you're going to have a street cross it, you're going to end up with a storm or sanitary across it. But for some reason, they have an issue with it running parallel to the gas main.
They just want to review it. And if you drill a fence post on that easement, they will have someone on site when you do that.
No doubt. Is that natural gas or gas? What is that in that pipeline?
I think it's pressurized petroleum, isn't it?
So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe I'm being dense here, but how do I get access to lots 2 and 3? I don't see a road to them.
There's already a driveway going down there to the south.
Okay.
South of lots 1 and 2, there's a drive that's already in.
There you go.
Okay.
The building on lot number 4 is already built. On lot number 1 is currently being built.
Okay.
Then that private drive sweeps around and turns north on the west sides of 2, 3, and 6.
Okay, others in the commission?
I would just add a comment that when I went through the packet and looked at the Creekside project that we just looked at and the density there, my first thought was, how does that match up with the density to the east? So now we see a decrease in density here, and I think it makes that whole area, it's a little bit better balance. And I would echo what John said, the outlots on the north border have given a lot of relief to those property owners. I think that was a really good move. So
with the larger buildings on the west side of this development, it'll feel a lot more open.
Yeah, it's much more compatible with all the new development in that neighborhood.
Yeah, good point. Okay, anyone else in the commission? Nope. Anyone in the audience with regard to this matter? Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Nick Bettis with Axiom Consultants, and I'm here just to represent the applicant. So if there are any additional questions, engineering or surveying-wise, I'll do my best to try to answer them.
Just one question I had when looking at and it's, is the road specification the same, whether it's private or public road?
Yeah,
change? Okay.
Yeah, that's required in city code for any private roads.
Private road meets a public road standard.
Correct.
Okay, didn't know that. Thanks.
Is
So what is the benefit to having the private road back there rather than the...
You don't have to plow it.
For the developer, sometimes it gives them a little more flexibility in terms of setbacks because there is no right-of-way mm-hmm. line. So they can basically decrease that front yard.
Okay. I knew there had to be something.
Utica Hills Point, mm-hmm. the old lodge redevelopment, they did that. Their lot lines run right to the middle of that private drive.
Okay.
So you got like some GPS control on the plow. He knows it like shuts off when he crosses the line.
Very big map. Big
yeah,
paper map.
Big map, yeah. Live map. Okay, good.
A little old school.
Yeah. All right, thank you. Anyone else in the audience with regard to this matter? Nope. Okay, we'll come back to the commission. Bless you.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve case number 19-010, Glenbrook Ridge, second edition, subject to SAP recommendations.
Okay.
Second.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second to approve case 19-010. Subject to the staff recommendations. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. 19-010 is approved. Okay, Greg.
Mr. Chairman, we're looking at a replat for an area, part of which in the Valley Winds 8th edition is already platted as lot 6. The southern portion is, but this northern portion is yet to be platted, but it will be incorporated into a one-lot configuration for Valley Winds 10th edition. This is lot 6 right here, the Valley Winds 8th. There is an area right here that is a portion of what was Valley Winds edition phase 2. This has already been platted as lot 6 in the 8th, and then this portion right here has been adjoined to that particular lot. Any drainage from that area up there, when that does get further developed, will go into this detention basin area here. And this is the finished product. It's a combination of lot 6 and then this additional area here from an area already preliminarily platted. Staff in reviewing this proposal would recommend approval with the conditions listed in the report. I would ask, are there any questions?
Okay, thanks, Greg. John, any updates subsequent?
Nothing from me.
Nope, nothing from staff. Okay. Questions or comments from the commission, please. You guys are too easy tonight. Okay, thanks. Anyone in the audience with regard to this matter? Nope. Okay, we'll come back to the commission.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move for approval of case 19-020, final plat, subject to staff recommendations.
I'll second.
Okay, thank you. We have a motion and a second to approve case 19-020, subject to the staff recommendations. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. 19-020 is approved. Okay, Greg.
Mr. Chairman, this area is part of what was the Beckplex second edition, I believe. This is C7, this lot. This is the parcel we're looking at, and this is a redo, essentially, of one of the buildings. Looking at lot 1 right here, which is the locale for that particular structure. This is originally designed as a 4,000 square foot building, and it was already approved as a site plan with these two structures here. It's been changed and updated now to include 1,550 more square feet, and we looked at all the things related to parking and the like. It really didn't change that outcome because there's so much parking within the entirety of the subdivision area that it had no bearing. This will give you an idea of what the structure looks like, different vantage points. Landscape plan was pretty much the same as what had been shown before, even though all the data did not show up on this graphic. Compare the two of them. You still have the birmingham and the trees. and you know, they went through the same procedure. There was no real tree count change due to the size of the structure, so it met with our specifications. Staff in reviewing this proposal would recommend approval with the conditions listed in the report. I would ask you, are there any questions?
Okay, thanks, Greg. John and staff, any updates on this one since publication?
No, sir.
Okay, thanks. Questions from the commission or comments, please?
Pretty straightforward.
Okay. None here. Anyone in the audience with regard to this matter? Okay, come on back to the commission.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move that we approve case 19-022 subject to staff recommendations.
I'll second.
Okay, thank you. We have a motion and a second to approve case 19-022 subject to staff recommendations. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Thank you. 19-022 is approved. Okay, Greg.
Our next project involves a veterinary clinic, and I did go back and do some research on this. This, in fact, is a C2 zone parcel. It was done, though, with a conditioning on it that this can only be used, this lot right here, for a veterinary clinic as C2, nothing else. So if that use were to go away, then essentially you would have to have it revert back to C1. There was a group of conditions that were listed with this as part of the rezoning, case 18-061. As you can see, no more than 5 employees allowed at any one time, no commercial boarding of any animals, no outside animal runs are allowed. Surgical animals are only to be outside to do what they need to do outside, and any and all animal waste to be removed immediately from the ground surrounding the exterior of the building. And then the developer agrees that if the property will develop in accordance with what was listed in the zoning in Table 1, that the neighborhood commercial section of the 2015, it has to comply with the premiering of Bettendorf plan, and then if any time in the future these conditions are violated, the use will then basically be reverted back to the C1. Also, if the building ownership were to change, I believe also that's another condition. But that gives you an idea that it's already been constrained, and that's the type of designation that basically is displayed here. I believe this graphic was given to us as part of that rezoning, to show the concept maybe of this area, how it laid out, or as it was a prior site plan marked here as Lot 5 and Lot 6 by the developer. This shows essentially what will be the completed area right here in what was the original concept. So what you're seeing, and here's the elevations right here of what the structure will look like. You notice it's more squared off. There is an area right here that's being added in the future. That area there will encompass the entirety of this building. The parking right now is already sufficient. This access will not be a portion of this. The parking will not either, because as of the present time, 21 spaces are provided and one space per 500 square feet is needed, far surpassing any future design of this structure. And we're trying to limit accesses, especially coming in here. You have to accommodate accesses for these areas, these lots over here, which are also commercial, and you've got two right here very close by. So we looked at that and felt it was important that we observe what was on site and make sure that we don't have an excess of something if it's not necessary. If we drop this access here, this parking in this area is almost impractical. I mean, there is almost no way to enter to have any spaces. So as is, it already meets the code significantly. Staff in reviewing this proposal recommends approval of the site plan with the conditions in the report. I would ask, are there any questions?
Okay, thanks, Greg. John and staff, any updates since publication?
Your conditions, once again, there's some house cleaning items that will be taken care of before we get to City Council. There'll be a slight redesign of that detention basin that you're seeing on the west side. Greg went to the site and discovered that there is a structure there. We believe it to be a transformer.
I saw it out station. There, yeah, a big green box and, out there. Yeah.
That's not in the utility easement, so we're working with the developer to make sure that there aren't any conflicts with that before this goes any farther.
Okay.
It was nothing that the developer could control. If there are expansions to the building, we would bring it back with a site plan and see how the parking would work.
And maybe just question administratively the conditions, Greg, that you had up on the screen. I know windmill are still the same as part of this. Is it the same? The doctor's the same and everything? All parties are the same? Nothing's changed there? So what's been agreed to before is still okay?
Ryan Windmiller.
Ryan, again. I called him Ryan, your brother Ryan, earlier. So
it's happened more than once.
Yeah.
No big deal. Yeah, it's the same doctor.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So everything's still locked up the way it is.
Good. Yes.
So the walkout, while I've got you there, the walkout goes to where? Is there a way to get up to the parking from there then?
No, right now he just wants to use that as storage. And so there's not access up to the top. There won't be any use down there. He's got stairs inside that will go down to that. In the future, they may want to do expansion. In that case, they would have to create access parking for that expanded space. Okay. And they can either do that with underground detention storage and put the parking over the top of that, or they can do parking on the side potentially.
Okay, thanks. Others on the commission, questions or comments? Okay, anyone else in the audience with regard to this matter? Okay, back to the commission.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move for approval of the case number 19-023, site development plan, subject to staff recommendations.
Second that.
Okay, thank you. We have a motion and a second to approve case 19-023, subject to staff recommendations. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. 19-023 is approved. Okay. Ray?
Our next item, John, our community development director, will address this body, and we will be awaiting the proceedings and see, you know, what consensuses might be reached. And this is just a sample, of course. It is not the definitive. There has to be a great deal of input into this before we reach any decisions. And the council will, of course, have that all into decision.
Trying to digest all of the items that were told to staff at the last Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, and taking some of that out and plugging it into some real world developments that have already occurred, we thought was the best way to, number one, know what the impact was going to be for the developers, and number two, know how it would have affected density. So I'm speaking very generically here this evening when I talk about some projects. Since this has gone out, well, I should perhaps go back historically a little bit. Before even last month, I had a visit with the Home Builders Association, presented this with the city engineer, some of what he's going to go over next on the subdivision ordinance. I went over some of the stuff on the density. They asked that we keep them in the loop and assure them that they knew when some of this was coming forward. I honored that, made sure that they were contacted, and that the developers, as many as could be, were contacted as well. Tonight is the first step in this whole process, and I'm hoping by the end of this meeting, if you think this thing's junk, that we can instead of saying it's junk, come to some consensus so that we can start to move forward. As you know, we started those workshops, I'm thinking 5-6 months ago this all started. So I would like to get something moving forward. After this step tonight, I'm going to see if we can arrange a meeting with the developers and the city council before this is brought before the city council, and maybe hold a workshop that way as well. I think it's important to get the input of everybody. Everything about Bettendorf always has been, and I sure hope it always will be, about including people into the process, and that's what we're trying to do, not just here this evening, but as we move forward. So trying to address some of the items we are recommending, based on what the commission directed us to do, that the site area per unit standard for townhouses in the R3, R4, and I5 districts be increased from 3,000 square feet to 4,000 square feet per unit. And then also a increase in the site area per unit standard for multifamily residential in the R4 and R5 from 2,500 square feet per unit to 3,000 feet per square unit. That's to address the density, and later on I'll kind of discuss how that worked with some, again, generic projects throughout the city. And then to our new ordinance is quite different than what the original ordinance was. The original ordinance, you'd go to R4, and it would tell you this is required for setback, for square footage, for side yards, front yards. In the new one, you have general directions in each one of those zoning districts, and then they refer you to tables, and the tables give you those specifics on development. And in each of those tables, from time to time, you'll see a note underneath things. Like for townhouses, you'll see it's this many feet for a setback, and then there's going to be C note number 2, and that's what I'm referring to on the next sections as we go through. We're recommending add a note for the setback for townhouses and multifamily units, that for each story above one story, an additional 5 feet is required for front yard setbacks that are adjacent to any collector, minor arterial, or principal arterial street as defined by the Bettendorf Transportation Plan. Also, a new note for the rear yard setback for townhouses and multifamily in the R3, R4, R5 districts. Again, for each additional story above one, an additional 5 feet is required if you are adjacent to a lesser residential zoning district. And by lesser, the most intense being R5, and as I progress, we'll be going less intense, R4, R3, R2, until you get down to the least intense R1. So anything above what you're seeing on that list would be subject to it if something under it on that list is adjacent to it in the rear.
And John, just let me just question right there.
Sure.
While you got just one quick. So would a jump from R5 to R2 be one unit of height, or would it be two because it's two classifications?
No.
It'd be one.
No, it's just whether it's more intense or less intense.
Not how many differences.
Correct.
But just a difference.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
So generically, how would this impact some developments that already exist? We have a development on about 4.5 acres that has 69 units on it right now, townhouse units. That would reduce that down to 48 units, or 21 less units. It's significant, okay? That's going to be a significant impact on these types of developments. And then there's another recent development that had 6 buildings, 24 units under the new That would be reduced to 19 units, so one of the buildings would be reduced. Again, pretty significant when you consider the size of what that development is. I've also had contractors call me today and indicate things that I think are going to be great input for us tonight, and I think they're planning on making some of these points, that we'll tweak this one way or the other, but I'd like to get it tweaked tonight so we can move forward and hopefully everybody be on the same page.
Okay.
One of the comments you made earlier, John, was about outlots.
Yes.
So in looking at these parameters that you're setting up, I heard you, I kind of read between the lines that you feel like we need to clarify how is the square footage determined, okay, whether the outlots are included or are not. What do you, what's your gut telling you? I know you, Greg, mentioned for one of the cases we looked at tonight, whether the outlots were included or not, in that particular case, it wasn't impacted.
Okay. As you drive into the development, it will look depends on what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
If you want separation from adjacent properties, maybe you want to encourage outlots so that you have bigger separation. And if you want to encourage outlots, you should include them in that calculation. If you want to restrict density even more, you would not include the outlots and just talk about the buildable area of the subdivision. So it would be whatever your intent is on this.
And if I could add, I think tonight's case was kind of unique because we were adjacent to a floodplain.
Huge.
That's,
huge.
That's almost outlots. The only time we end up with the required outlots that must be purchased with the individual ones.
And they're not very large. No. Sometimes the outlots are a lot larger than, sure, that. So then that has a bigger impact,
absolutely,
on the calculations.
Well, with the Cottage Grove this evening, those are huge outlots back there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
On what's the south side, yeah.
Yeah, what's the percentage of that that's outlots? 50? Yeah,
it's a good amount, though.
It's a huge amount.
And to that note, and I would say, from my perspective, I would prefer to focus on the impact that it's going to have on the community around it than on the development itself, because it'll be up to the developer to make that area they're working on functional for the people that they want to purchase it or to utilize it.
Mm-hmm.
To whereas I feel like we have more of a responsibility to other existing properties and how it'll affect them in the long run.
So it would follow that if we want to create more space,
mm-hmm,
encouraging the outlots would have that. It would have that impact.
You would encourage to include the outlots.
Mm-hmm. Well, and by including the outlots, then you're encouraging developer to put them in, because it affects the net calculation.
Land is pretty expensive.
Yeah.
They don't like outlots because you can't build on them. I don't think we should make an assumption that there's going to be encouragement to make more outlots.
Okay. That's not really what I meant. I just meant to create space to focus on creating space, you know, between
right
previous developments and new ones, rather than worrying about the density so much of the development.
So
if you're going to go one direction or the other,
you're going to need an extra 15 feet up front, and you really could use an outlot. Then you could use an outlot as part of it to get your property moved back. Mm-hmm. To me, that makes sense.
John, do you have any comments or maybe feedback on part of the catalyst? Maybe talk a little bit, how is it that this is coming up? Why is it that this is coming up? I mean, from my perspective, just personally within the community, I've had more feedback, and I've been doing this for 8 or 9 years now, about some of the most recent developments that have either been developed or been looked at than anything ever in the past. So from my perspective, what's coming on the market, there's market considerations, here's the financial considerations, what's going to sell, what's your target audience, where's the best place to put it if it is density, is it next to something else? But I've gotten more comments personally about some recent developments than ever before, and I think that's what we've kind of come back to you guys and said, man, and some of the site plans we've looked at have been uncomfortable for us, frankly, to process. At least I'll say that for myself. It's like I'll use the 10 pounds in a 5-pound bag. It just feels like too much. And whether we're trying to create something that over addresses that, I don't know. But it's clear to me that there's something that needs to be addressed and discussed, because it's lit up a number of folks unlike anything else that I've dealt with in my 8 years on this board. So that's why I'm glad we're talking about it. That's why I think we have that discussion. And I know there's another whole dimension of the market, the valuation, interest rate sensitivities affect things. I mean, you can't develop it if you can't make it work financially. You can't develop it if it's not going to sell or rent. Maybe some pieces are too small, frankly, or too expensive to try and make it work under the rules. I don't know. Maybe they need to be used for something else. But those are some of the dynamics, I think, that need to be discussed and talked about as well, because it's all part of the perspective
and
of what's the right thing
to
do.
I'm encouraged to see how many of the developers are here that are willing to give us some input.
So the more feedback we have on that from, and I see a few of them out here for sure that I know, happy to hear it.
Roy, can I ask you real quick, are those developments that you're referring to character development areas, ones that were developed in the character development area, or were they zoned in the typical Euclidean?
We've heard this
I'm just curious
repeatedly
if that
there's
any impact.
Been a problem since the new ordinance was adopted. None of these
none
are
of
projects
them were
under
even,
the new ordinance.
I don't think
They're
so.
All the previous ordinance.
Okay.
The new ordinance has not done this.
Yeah.
Thank you for clarifying.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Kevin Dolan, Town and Country Manor Development. And first, I just want to say I appreciate the collaborative approach that the City of Bettendorf has taken with us and the steps, John, you and the staff have taken up to this point. As the developer of one of the projects specifically or generically listed in the impacts of these, I did want to take a minute to urge this commission to consider not just the impact on number of units in those developments, but on the cost that these changes would have to the city in the form of lost tax revenue. There's infill lots all over the city that would become increasingly or maybe impossible to develop because they just aren't economical when you decrease density and increase setbacks. Our project, for example, the 24-unit townhome development, used to have a dilapidated farmhouse and a pole barn. Since then, we've increased the tax revenue by about $85,000 a year. I see that as a public good, and I can speak with total certainty that project would not have worked, under these proposed changes, and in turn, that would have meant lost tax revenue for the city. So I do think that that's an important aspect to consider in all of this.
Yeah, great. So one of the things that's hard to measure and figure out, because each deal has its own variables you got to deal with. So at what point does it become, it's hard for us to understand sitting on this side of it, at what point does it become unsuccessful or unprofitable or not profitable enough? So you've got zoning constraints, you've got material constraints, you've got land cost constraints. If you're financing it, you got interest rate sensitivities and things. A 200 basis point interest rate change could blow it away, even though the rest of it works. So there are multiple variables that are being affected. How do we have something that does the right thing for the developer and still protects the city? So maybe, and I'm not saying that's the case, but maybe $65,000 in revenue would give us tax revenue. Not that we're doing it based on tax revenue, but maybe that's enough to make it, hey, it looks good for the city. It's got the right density. It feels good, but it might not make it for you, but maybe it would make it for the guy over here. I don't know. That's something we don't have a good feel and understanding for, but it's obviously a material part of what you guys decide and do every day.
Yeah, that's absolutely a fair point, and that's something that you as the commission will have to consider. I think it is sometimes that side of it is lacking from the discussion. The impact is listed only in terms of reduced units, but I think it's just important to consider that there is a public good that's served by development, and there's having infill lots go undeveloped all over the place probably isn't. So just another consideration.
Yeah, no, appreciate the input. Yeah, the more that we get, the better. So, yep. And please, anyone else in the audience with regard to this?
My name's Dan Dolan. I'm his dad, Town and Country Development. I think you're hitting on all great points, but anything that increases the risks are going to diminish production in the community. Interest rates, 1 point change in a 30-year mortgage raise a house payment or a long-term finance project, almost 12%. That's a 1 point change. Material costs, labor costs, 3.5 to 5% a year going up. Land, I think it's tripled in the last 10 years here in Bettendorf. So the next downturn will solve all these problems. You won't see all these terrible buildings going up.
There's a cleansing, Dan. You're right. There's a cleansing every few years.
Yeah. Everything that increases risk will diminish revenue. So I guess I'm just echoing that. It's you said, well, it's hard to see from the side of the table. It's hard for me to see what's going on that side of the table because I got to stay up at night worrying about if this thing is going to work. So all those pressures just make it harder and harder. So I just wanted to echo what my son was saying. So
yep. No,
thank you.
Appreciate it. Yep. Thanks, Dan. Okay. Lots of folks out there. We'd like to hear more.
Good evening. I'm Adam Seitz. I'm with Advance Homes. We're multifamily, residential, and commercial builders in the city of Bettendorf. We currently have a 24-unit, six-building complex facility going on right now under construction in Bettendorf. One thing that I think that's being missed here a little bit is the talk about, to make you guys more comfortable, is more accurate conceptual plans that are being turned in. I think that that's something that we can do better as developers, turning in more accurate conceptual plans for the commission to review, and that might give you guys some more comfortability going forward. There's more things that we can do as well to help you guys as far as getting things right. So that's one thing that we can do better on our end as well. But we would like to volunteer as, being part of a collaborative effort. I don't think we're going to get all these answered here tonight, but I think a workshop, a collaborative effort between the city developers, I think is a good plan as a way to get this done. So we'd like to volunteer to be part of that.
Yeah, great. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Yep. And just for feedback on that concept, I know there's been some developments we've looked at zoning changes. The zoning change goes through, and there's a, I don't want to say a representation, but there's an indication at least, I'll go that strong, on what's going to be built there, and then what comes in the site plan looks substantially different. And
correct.
Now the door's open, the cat's out kind of thing, however you want to talk about it, it's got that zoning, and it's frankly something that I personally would not have approved if I knew that's what was going to show up as a site plan.
And
but
I think
we've got a process.
If more accurate conceptual plans were turned in,
yeah, that's where I'm going.
I believe that might help that. One thing just specifically in John's presentation here that we feel might be a good idea and we can talk about more in the workshop is the setback changes, maybe not from density to density, but from different uses. So going from R5 to R4 for a setback may not be as important, but really going from R4 to R3, needing that change may be a better use. And those are things we can talk about in the workshops, but for the setback requirements.
Well, my... that's perfect if you know if something's
correct.
Already built.
Right.
But if it's not and it's a lower zoning district, what do you do in cases like that?
Exactly. It you can't always look into the crystal ball, but
yeah.
So, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
thanks.
You.
Ryan
Windmiller with Windmiller Design. I echo a lot of what they're saying. I really appreciate you guys thinking through this. I think it's very, very important for the city to think about these things and make sure the city stays a premier city like it has been. I think it's also equally important for us to think from the developer side, the builder side, on cost effectiveness. I love the idea of the workshop and working together from both sides. It's I feel like I'm right on the fence with this. I definitely understand the economic aspects of it, and you cannot, there's a lot of sites you cannot make work without having the right density, and there's sites in the area that if you can't find the right usage won't ever work. But in the same regards, we want to make sure that there's usages that, or the end product represents what this city is about and looks good. It doesn't, just because it's lesser expensive does not mean it has to look bad or make the city look bad. There's lots of great projects you can do and create a cost-effective or an affordable housing aspect for the community. And that's something that city came to the builders and developers years ago and wanted stuff that was under $300,000. There's no affordable housing, and so the builders and developers are trying to do that. And we do not want to be handcuffed and not be able to do that. But the same stroke, we want to make sure that everybody's following along and making sure the end product looks right for the community. So I echo with whatever things been said, and I'm glad that we're having that open discussion.
And I appreciate our discussion on the phone today when you told me, okay, a normal two-car driveway is 18 foot wide. We require it to be pushed back another 10 feet, that's another 180 square feet of concrete that per unit that you're going to have to do.
And plus sewer, plus water.
The added sewer, and you start multiplying that per unit, and that's something that I thought was a good point to bring up.
Yep, the more square footage of the yard, the more sod we have to put in. Yep, so...
And those are all things that I think we need to take in perspective. And then there's a valuation by the buyer that says, oh, I love a bigger yard. Some will say, I want a smaller yard because I don't have to cut it. But that that space and that openness and that whole, I'll call it curb appeal, that a lot of people like to live in Bettendorf as opposed to other places for, are willing to pay maybe a premium for. The question becomes, can you get the premium you need to justify the other expenses you have? I think it's also a good point you raised, Ryan, that there was a study done. I participated in that task force a while ago looking at housing, and there was a identified gap on the, call it, lower end of the price spectrum in Bettendorf. So how do we produce that? That becomes more of a challenger from a developer standpoint. How do we bring something the market, you're saying the market needs in this community, but it doesn't hit a developable price point? Mm-hmm. Now we got a dilemma. How do we do that? Is it more important to stay 400,000 and above and satisfy that segment of the market, or not address the 400 or whatever and below? So that's all fair game for discussion as well. Yeah, good point.
I think it can be done. I think you do have to think about these. Each site is individually different, and I think you had mentioned that earlier. And Adam mentioned the when you're right up against another R5 or another R4, it's less important than if you're up against an R2 or an R1. Yeah. Or right against a main artery, which I like that. So I don't know how you do it, and I think that's where the study group can work, but you almost have to look at individual sites and adjust according to what's around that and what's going on with the development that's wanting to go in and what's around it.
Yep, thanks, appreciate it. Okay, others in the audience, we'd love to have the comments. Nobody else? Okay.
I'm going to piggyback a little bit on what Ryan was saying.
I want a good dynamic discussion here.
The project that kind of started this, if you take that project off the hill and put it somewhere else, it wouldn't have quite the reaction that it has where it's at. And I bring that up because if we go putting too much limitation on the builders, we're really going to have some issues there. Again, we'll have lots that do sit empty. If a project like that wasn't put on the hill, it was put somewhere else, and then you have more buildings similar around it, after a few years, we wouldn't even notice that it looks overpopulated, too dense somewhere else. So I would caution that we be careful on that and maybe focus more on the infrastructure that the density is using than looking so much at saying that's just too dense for that area, and say, okay, it's too dense for that area based on the infrastructure around it. If they can build it with not much setback and they can get it rented, sold, whatever, and then as they build around it, it's absorbed, everything looks fine because it's all similar, then who are we to say that they need 15-foot setback instead of just 5? And I'm being general in this. And again, this all comes from your project up on the hill. If it wasn't on the hill, it wouldn't have drawn near the attention. I just want to make that point that before we put these rigid standards in place, which, by the way, the new zoning is trying to get away from, we kind of, and it goes along with what Ryan's saying, it's almost, and I don't know how you do that, it's almost like you need to be more looking at project, each project. So I didn't help you, John, any, but I just wanted to make that point that, you know, you put that up on top of the hill, everybody notices it. I can think of a few other places if that same project was put there, we might have cringed a little bit about the density, but we probably wouldn't have had any phone calls. Nobody really would have noticed it.
It's something that sticks out, gets more notice, no doubt, mm-hmm. whichever development it is. And the other thing that, from my perspective, looking at trying to get the best overall development for Bettendorf that works for developers and works for the community, it's got to be functional. You got to be able to back out a car. You got to be able to park cars when your friends come over. You got to be able to empty your trash. You got to be able to get your mail. It's the things of life that when it's an easy place, people don't necessarily notice it, but when it's not, they notice it. Yeah. It's kind of like, this doesn't work. And part of my mission in this is to not help create something that doesn't work or isn't easy. I'd like it to be easy and functional, because then people want to buy it and rent it, and mm-hmm. people want to live here and pay taxes, and everybody's smiling and happy. So that's
agree.
Narnia, but that's the way I look at it,
and,
frankly.
And that's my point. That's the stuff we should focus on more than...
But what you identified, Scott, is one of the challenges we have is that these things don't always all develop in one nice, neat package. And when things are coming to us in bits and pieces, that's where we run into some problems.
And I'll just make one point. The biggest problem we've ever created for ourselves is when we let the R1 and the R2 go right next to the C1 and the C2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest problem mm-hmm. we've always created for ourselves.
Hopefully we won't ever do that again.
I hope so, too.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I think we also have to consider, and this is along with the chairman's point, is also just a safety standpoint. At which point do we get these buildings so tight to each other mm-hmm. that we present a fire issue? You know, the fireman can't get in there and fight something without having, now he's got 3 buildings he has to worry about instead of 1. So I think that's an issue, and I don't know, have we addressed that with, these buildings are all getting taller. I mean, that's one of the issues that I see is that mm-hmm. before, you know, when you had these townhouse units, you had the garage that would be in front of the unit. You know, the units were behind. You see a lot of that in the older sections of town. Now we've got the garages underneath them, which is adding another story. So now we can make things tighter. And so we have more space, more buildings on a smaller space. You know, we've done the same thing with R1s and R2. We seldom see R1 anymore. Everything's coming in with R2. Why is that? Because the lots are smaller. Mm-hmm. So you have bigger buildings, they're bigger buildings on smaller lots. So we're becoming more and more dense. And one of the issues that functionality is one, but also just a standard, you know, safety. Do we have too much fire load in on a street that makes it a hazard for the firemen to come in and try to fight something? So, and I think that that's something else that needs to be thought of. And these developers are trying to maximize their return, which is what they should be doing. But we also have to look at, what about the people that are going to live in that community? Do they have the kind of amenities that should be there? Do they have enough space that they've got the standard of living that we're used to in Bettendorf? You go around the older sections of town, and there's plenty of open space. You get into some of the newer areas, and people are right next to each other. So I think that that's, it's not just those two buildings. I think there's a lot of things that have led to our need for this kind of an ordinance change.
Yep. Thanks,
I'm not
Paul.
Sure that everybody wants all that space any longer. You know, there's a demographic out there that less is more in their mind. That's just trending and different. It depends probably on the price point and the neighborhood and how the concepts develop, but
yeah,
not everybody
I'm sure that's true.
Necessarily.
I'm sure that's true. And that's why we have different R3s, R4s,
right.
R5s.
Exactly. Something for everybody.
And I'd like to say, Paul, I actually agreed with everything you said except for the assumption that people want more space.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with the fire, you know, all of that, which is all stuff that we're going to count on hopefully the city staff to make sure we're doing what we need to do as the buildings go up, and we need to make sure the parks come in and say we need so much for parks. All the infrastructure, I completely agree with that. But I don't want to make the assumption that the people that are going to come in and buy this want the grass.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily grass.
Separation.
It's not necessarily grass. If you look at some of the units that are built out there, there is very little grass. I mean, so it's not necessarily grass. It's just space. Now, granted, not everybody wants a lawn. Not everybody wants a garden.
Let's go to the stress question and ask Steve. What is safety between buildings for fire?
Well, basically, under the fire code, there's nothing that addresses that. For structures built under the International Building Code, there are requirements based on how far a structure is from the property line and from a neighboring building. And if it's within a certain distance, then firewalls are required that are fire rated to protect from the neighboring building. Personally, we, as a fire department, we don't like to see buildings close together. We've had fires in houses where it's affected the neighboring house before we got there, or even after we're there, because of the heat.
What's close together? I mean, I'm just saying, because like right now, you know, even in residential, you could have a minimum of a 5-foot, you know, separation between your yard or dual 10. If you each have 5 on that side, that's not a very big distance between house to house. And now we're talking about multiple families and lots of people living in buildings, and what is safe between to have space, airspace between them, so that the fire doesn't spread.
That's a difficult question to answer. And under the code, there's the requirements there for fire protection of the
it's more material based than space based.
There was a fire out near Pebble Creek a few years ago. The house burned down.
Oh, yeah.
And there were houses quite a bit of distance, 30, 40 feet, and the siding was melted on this house.
Radiant heat goes a long ways. And if there's wind, that can definitely affect how far it goes to the buildings that are downwind.
But to address some of the items you just discussed, if it's going to be a townhouse unit or a multifamily, it's going to go through site plan. And everybody is at the table on staff. Fire department's there, police are there, parks is there, and often they'll look and say, this would be a perfect place for some green space and an open or a pocket park for the neighborhood. And we might purchase a lot or two from the developer to do just that. Engineering is there. They're all looking at these things. So it is being addressed. I think we have just about every department represented in that development review committee.
We do. Roy, if I could add to your, the functionality that you're talking about. The first case of tonight, the Cottage Grove, was a very good example of that. You know, we were using the word during our development review and internally of serviceability.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. Not only can we get the fire trucks around, can we get the garbage trucks around, but that's where we got to the snow removal. And the developer worked really well with us this time, and we've had that on other sites where we've had that concern, and we're learning, quite frankly, from some of our mistakes. But that is something that we're starting to put a much more greater emphasis on, but it's really hard to codify it on mm-hmm. how much space you need for snow, you know, especially like we kept talking about. We just came off, you know, second or third worst winter that we've had. So to compare it actual versus code language can be very difficult. So we do appreciate, you know, everybody that's in this room working with us when we bring up those concerns, knowing that I can't necessarily point to a specific ordinance section saying that it doesn't meet that. But we know from an operational perspective that we're going to have issues.
Yeah,
it's something like, we'll continue to work through, and it's really on a site-by-site basis.
I live in a cul-de-sac, and I watch the guy come. First, the big plow comes through and takes his big swipe, and then your guy comes in the pickup truck, and it's a lot of work. It's a lot of back and forth, and he, frankly, does a wonderful job trying to keep the driveways that are pretty close together from being buried. He'll scoop off to the sides as best he can, but I just think of all the number of cul-de-sacs in town and how much extra work that is. So serviceability is important in the long run. Yep. Some of these are
absolutely
private developments with internal control over the snow removal and things like that. So sort of not our issue, but that becomes the market issue on the livability of it. You know, can you back your crowd? Is there somewhere to put the snow? If there's nowhere to go with it, what do they do with it?
Sure. And you know, even if it is privately taken care of, you know, at some point you're going to go back to a city street. So if they don't have room on their home property, we know where that snow's going to end up. You know, hire the best contractor in the world, and if they run out of space, they're going to push across the street.
Yeah, it's survival.
Yeah, all things
that
we've got to look at.
So after a bit of discussion, anyone else in the audience with regard to this matter for additional feedback? Again, we'd love to hear it. And I'm getting a little, feeling that are we ready to vote on this or to table it for? I'm hearing from the audience, the developer side, you're looking for more discussion and work sessions.
Input.
I'm seeing a few nods. Is that correct? All those in favor, raise your hand. Yeah, now I'm visual. I can see it. Okay.
I will arrange another work session for, and the developers will be, I wish we had a sign-up sheet of everybody that was here tonight.
We could pass something around.
Take a picture.
Tim will go to the game.
I think I can remember the people that are here tonight. If I forget them, they'll let me know.
Well, or just if you want to participate, maybe put a sheet back there on the podium and sign your name that's here. And I know there's others that you've spoken with along the way. You said you've had a lot of feedback. So
yes.
Want to keep it manageable.
We'll try to make it a combined workshop like we did last time and bring the developers in and get their feedback on this. This was good tonight. This was very good.
Before we go, I would like to take advantage of Mr. Seitz's offer to have an enhanced presentation. I, you know, one of the things like tonight, I'll be honest with you, with the Cottage Grove, mm-hmm. Yeah, the first thing that went to my mind is, well, they went from 24 units to 46 units. What does that do? You know, what does that look like? What's that? How's that compare to the rest of the neighborhood? That, and it's very hard. Mm-hmm. And I think that some of the, well, both the people on this commission we've talked about that we kind of got blindsided with both those buildings that we've talked about, because when you look at the things that were given to us, we had no idea what it was actually going to look like. And so if we could come up with some kind of a enhanced presentation that would help us along those lines, I would really appreciate it.
I would say especially with the apartment buildings or anything over two stories, you know, it's a lot easier if you present a 3D rendering or even front elevations, something along with where we're at today, like you were saying, so we're not envisioning 42, you know, units going on 42 lots. And, you know, to hear that there was, what did you say, Ryan, 12, 14 buildings going up in Cottage
Grove? 12, I think.
12 buildings.
12 buildings, 46 units, right? And then to have the comparison to what you already have going up, and I was actually just on that site this week, it feels very comfortable. But it's hard to envision that with just what we presented today. So,
and it's maybe a quarter built out.
And I think a concept, we certainly wouldn't expect you to upfront site plan money before you ever know if you're even getting your zoning. But if we could have a concept plan.
Yeah. I mean, well, even just having verbally.
A sketch.
Telling us, yeah, a sketch. Okay. Something.
Paul, remember when in the past there was a time where part of the presentation, the packet, included photographs. And sometimes there were lines or things drawn, superimposed on the photograph that would give us a sense of the height.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, would that be helpful?
I think anything along those lines would be helpful.
It's probably
it's
of
really
work.
What this commission wants. You know, the thing is that I think we've talked about this, that looking at the plats that
we
looked at,
we can't,
you know, the landscaping plans and everything else, both those developments looks great.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you see it actually built out, I think it's the height that just kind of overshadows everything else. Mm-hmm. And you don't really see that from a single
right.
plan.
And one of the reasons we were requesting a further setback with more height is so that it doesn't, when you're driving down the road, you don't feel like it's barreling on top of you because there's these, you know, four stories just right off of, I mean, I could say that's kind of a main art. One of mm-hmm. them is kind of on a main artery road, to be as general as possible.
Well, no, this has been a good discussion. I'd like to get this. I think we need to move forward, though.
Yeah.
Once we get this workshop,
yeah,
I think
yeah,
we need
I
to move
I do
forward.
Too. And it's a challenge because it's a difficult thing. I don't know who used the word codify, but it was, I think it was it Ryan. You said codify. It was tough to. Or somebody said tough to codify. It is. It's hard to describe in writing what works from a formula standpoint to make it functional. Mm-hmm. That's hard to write. Mm-hmm. I get that. That's hard to write. And it's got to be something that's easy to use, too, or it doesn't get utilized or the frustration levels go. So that's, I guess, an overriding challenge. I'd say it's got to be pretty simple, the less complex it is. But the tendency of this, because of the complexity of it, is to make it a complex kind of solution, and we got to really fight making it complex. It needs to be as simple but functional as possible. Okay. Easy to say, hard to do.
One other thing I would like to say that I've really appreciated about the developers since I've been on this committee is your willingness to work with us. There's been many a times I've seen us go, whoa, you know, this looks like a lot in a little bit of space, and you've been willing to redesign, to look at it again, to create a new plan, something else that works better in the space for the community. So I definitely appreciate that relationship with this community.
All right, so from a procedural standpoint, do we want to defer this then?
Sure.
Yeah, okay, so can I have a motion to defer?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move that we defer case 19-025.
And I can't guarantee we'll get this done by your next meeting either.
Yeah.
Okay. Just want to be clear.
I'll second that.
Okay, good. Thanks. We have a motion and a second to defer case 19-025 pending further input from the developer group and the city. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Same sign. 19-025.
Staff has the names of all the developers.
Good. Is deferred. So, and again, for the record, for the developers, we do appreciate and seek your input because it's a village. I hate to use that quote, but it takes a village to do this. And
wants to go over.
Yeah, it does. So we appreciate it and look forward to the input, and we'll go from there. So then I think are down to commission update, right?
No, I think you have one more.
Oh, sorry. Let me get back to
subdivision
my
subdivision ordinance.
Oh, the ordinance. Sorry. Crossed over. Greg.
No, it's that'll be
legal.
That'll
yeah,
be
me.
That'll be the city
amendment,
engineer.
0926. Hang on. Get 25.
It's not another case.
It's not a case.
It's, just
right.
the
it's an update.
We're just going to give you a quick update on some proposed changes. So there is no case. This does not require
an
action.
All right.
yes, it does.
Does it?
Yeah. They should recommend.
Hmm.
Can we recommend if it's not on the agenda?
It is on the agenda. We just
did you get a revised one?
Okay. I handed it to Roy. And
okay, perfect.
And it's been posted.
So we have four small changes that are going forward to we're recommending on the subdivision ordinance. It's on the
okay.
I've got a full presentation. I'm just going to brief through them here. They're pretty immaterial for what you guys tend to review. They're more on the construction end. We've talked to the Home Builder Association. We've talked to the developers regarding all this.
Guys.
First item is we're going to officially codify the increased size of the cul-de-sacs. I believe we've talked to you guys about this. You've seen that on a few of them. The need for it, we've discussed.
For sure.
Roy, I think you hit it the nail on the head. The larger size, we'll be able to use a single one of our single axle trucks around there as opposed to adding more staff to our courts and cul-de-sacs crews. We're up to, I think, upwards of almost 120 cul-de-sacs, 9 or 10 full-time staff members that are taken away from their other duties to plow cul-de-sacs. So the City Council did discuss this last night. They decided to defer it. They are working, they're trying to decide. We've talked about a cost share that we're offering, that the city will pay the increased cost between the old configuration and the new. We had initially suggested through the end of this fiscal year. Council was talking last night about maybe extending that sum. So that's still to be determined, but the change itself will go forward. They're just working on the on how long they want to extend that to. We're going to be adding in a inspection fee for televising of our sewers, something we've been doing for almost 10 years. Every new storm and sanitary sewer that's put in, we run our closed circuit camera down it. Really helps us. It stops at every single joint in the pipe and does a 360 view.
Yeah.
We catch a lot of defects. Very rarely do we actually get through an entire line without finding something. It's pretty labor intensive, and also the equipment's very expensive. The camera truck itself, when we purchased it, was like $250,000. Going to be approaching the end of its useful life here in the next few years. City of Davenport has the exact same fee. We're proposing $1.25 a foot. It's the FEMA rate. Obviously, again, to the developers in the area, not trying to add more fees, but things that costs that we incur to make sure the work's being done right. On average, we calculated for somewhere between a 30 to 40 lot subdivision, you're probably looking at $5,000 to $7,000 in total inspection fees. What that has enabled us to do, however, is back off the man-hour inspections that used to come with inspecting those sewers. Our guys actually used to have to get down in the manhole and shine a light through it and look on the other end. So, I mean, you couldn't get a lot of detail. So we're not charging the man-hours. We're just charging the per-foot cost. So we're going to recommend that going forward. Going to mandate the installation of street lights. Not a problem on basically anyone in the room on their additions, but there are a few additions that were done over the years that the street lights were not put in. It was not actually codified that they were required to be installed. So we will be mandating that. Those will also need to be LED fixtures. Obviously, we've moved to the LED retrofit for all of the city fixtures. The Woodlands actually is the first addition that has somewhat of a decorative LED pole. It's a black metallic pole, and actually Wyndham West has it out front on Middle Road as well.
Yep. No, they're good looking.
Trying to get rid of the high pressure sodium, the yellow lights that we have. In addition to the fact that we have, I think, somewhere between 6 and 8 styles of decorative lights that exist in the city. Working with Mid-American as well and trying to find a LED retrofit for those.
So will that be going through all the subdivisions that have street lights along the way over some period of time?
If they can find a head that'll fit, yes. Little surprised personally that they haven't found one yet, but they said they've told us they haven't found a conversion kit yet that they're willing to take on. But yes, I expect that to happen.
Like some smart engineer ought to invent one.
Somebody can make some money.
Yeah, well, there you go.
And then the last item was one that we really worked with the Home Builders Association on, had some really good input. We had a section in the code that allowed for occupancy permits to be issued if the street infrastructure was not complete by them issuing a bond for 150% of the remaining infrastructure costs. quite frankly, that doesn't really do much for us. All it was, in my opinion, was basically a financial determinant to have them doing that. Our preference initially when we met with home builder was to not issue any building permits until all the infrastructure was in. They brought up some great points. So what we agreed to was as long as the sewer is in, they can start building, so they can be issued a building permit. We're going to get rid of the bond altogether, and we just stated that no occupancy permits would be issued until the street was in, which generally is not an issue by that point. It's generally just the start of construction. These guys invest heavily in the infrastructure. If they have anything that slows the process, if the weather doesn't cooperate, they're paying on that investment and need to get some revenue started. So it was a really good discussion we had with them, and I think that was a pretty fair compromise. So we're just going to clean up that language as well.
Okay, good. And again, I'm hearing things where you had an idea, you went for some feedback to the stakeholders, got some feedback back, made a couple alterations in it, and it's still something that works for you and works for them. I love that. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, good.
Chris,
appreciate
do
that.
You need
it?
I would just recommend that if we could get a motion or for a recommendation to proceed with the subdivision ordinance changes as outlined by the city engineer. Oh, I'm sorry.
Do you want to ask for input?
Yeah, so from a process standpoint, before we go to a vote, so is there anyone in the audience that would like to provide input with regard to the revision of the subdivision ordinance? Back to the commission.
All right. So I move we approve case 19-026, the subdivision ordinance amendment as stated.
I'll second.
Okay, good. We have a motion and a second to approve the subdivision ordinance amendment, case 19-026, as recommended and presented. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. It's recommended. Okay. Commission updates, Mr.
Thank you,
John.
Mr. Chairman. At the March 5th City Council meeting, they approved the final plat of Betplex 3rd Edition. They approved the final plat of Utica Hills Point 2nd Edition. They approved the preliminary plat of Glenbrook Ridge Phase 2. They approved the preliminary plat of Century Heights Phase 4. They approved the site development plan for the Enterprise Training Center on Lot 5 of Betplex 3rd Edition. And they approved the site plan at 4345 and 4413 53rd Avenue. Last night, they held the public hearing and approved the first reading of the rezoning of 4065 Forest Grove Drive from A1 to R2. And that summarizes the actions that have been taken since we met last.
They've been busy. So have we, I guess.
Hopefully.
Yeah. All right. Good. All right. So last call for the good of the order. Anyone else with input before we close tonight's meeting? No. Again, thank you all for your input. We appreciate it. We do all want to work together and make it better for all of us. So thanks again. All right. With that, we are adjourned. Thanks.